Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Metzia Daf Kuf Tes Vov. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the Mishnah that you will find toward the end of the narrow lines of the Gemara, the second to last narrow line. We deal with the issue of a lender who extended a loan to a widow. And the issue concerns taking collateral from her. The Mishnah says, Almona, bein shehi aniya, bein shehi ashira. When it comes to a widow, whether she is poor or wealthy, ein memashkinen osa. One is not to take a mashkon from her, a mashkon collateral. Shenemar loisachbo beged almona. Do not take as a mashkon the garment of a widow. Bear in mind that we are continuing topics and discussions that we've had in the last couple of dapim of Gemara, so that we are working on the assumption that if you are a first-time listener, you would certainly want to familiarize yourself with the previous pages of Gemara. In discussing collateral, mashkon, being taken from a borrower, we noted that one is expected to return to the borrower in the event that he took items that the borrower ordinarily needs. For example, pajamas, nighttime clothing. The lender, though he took it as a mashkon, is expected by the Torah to return that item to the borrower during the hours of a day that he needs it. So that if you took a pair of pajamas from a borrower, return it to him for his nighttime use. If you took a business suit from a borrower, return it to him. The lender is expected to return it to him during the daytime. Of course, that procedure, that approach, is if the borrower doesn't have any additional sets of nighttime or daytime clothing, and what you took as a mashkon is all that he has. Now, with that background in mind, we continue in the Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, Almona. When it comes to a widow, bein she aniya, bein she ashira, whether she is impoverished or a woman of means, ein memashkin oso divrei Rabbi Yehuda. One is not to take from her a mashkon. Rabbi Shimon Omer, ashira memashkin oso. If she's a woman of means, you're entitled to receive from her a mashkon. Aniya ein memashkin oso. However, an impoverished widow, you are not to take a mashkon. Shato chayv lachzir la. The reason not to take from the impoverished woman is because what you take from her, you will have to return to her, as we described a few minutes ago. Ve'ata masiyah shem ra b'shchinasa. And you will cause murmurings, literally a bad name amongst her neighbors when they see you. Let's assume that the lender was a man. They see him going over to her, going into her house to return the item. What's he doing in her house? What will the neighbors think? So, in order to avoid that, we preempt that situation by saying that if you're dealing with an almona that's impoverished, you do not take a mashkon from her, because, as we said, taking a mashkon from an impoverished person necessitates the return of the item during the hours that it is needed. In looking at this Tanaic source, we have two opinions of Rabbi Huda and Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Huda makes no distinction between Aniya and Ashir, just a blanket prohibition of taking a mashkon from a widow. It would appear then that according to Rabbi Huda, when the Torah says, and we saw the pasuk in the Mishnah, Lo Sachbol Beged Almona, the pasuk in the Torah did not qualify. So if the Torah didn't qualify, we don't offer reasons and explanations. We leave it as it is, unqualified. That is called, or that approach to psukim is what we would say is lo dorish taima dekor. He doesn't attempt to give explanations to the psukim. Rabbi Shimon, on the other hand, qualified the Torah's ruling, do not take a mashkon from almona, giving a reason to it. Meaning, namely, taking from her will cause people to raise eyebrows and murmurings. What are you doing in her house? Well, that idea of being in her house is only relevant to a poor almona. With that in mind, then Rabbi Shimon is looking at the pasuk and offering an explanation, reason for the Torah ruling. That's called Dorish Taima Dekra. And the Gemara will shortly point out that we find in another instance these two rabbis, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon, taking an opposite approach to what we seem to have them saying here. Now the Gemara. Lemaimra, is this to suggest then the Rabbi Yehuda lo dorish taima dekra, Rabbi Shimon dorish taima dekra, that Rabbi Yehuda doesn't offer reasons to the Torah ruling and Rabbi Shimon does? We have heard them approach psukim in an opposite fashion. Desanya, the pasuk that we open up with deals with laws that pertain to kings in Jewish law, and amongst the various teachings, it says "Velo yarbe loy noshim," and the pasuk goes on to say "Velo yosur levavo." He shall not have a lot of women, an overabundant number of wives, and they should not lead his heart astray. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Marbehu. Rabbi Yehuda says a king is entitled to have as many as he wants. There's no number limitation. Uvat shelo yu mesuros es libo, provided they do not cause him to go astray. In other words, if he wants to have pious type wives, he can have as many as he wants. Even though the pasuk says lo yarbe lo nashim, he should not have a lot of wives, but there's a reason behind it. And with that reason in mind, the restriction on numbers of wives is dependent on the nature of the women. Rabbi Shimon Omer, afilo achas v'mesiras libo arezo lo yusaheno. Rabbi Shimon says, if it's one woman that she's frivolous, she's not pious, she is capable of leading the king astray, he is not to marry her. Imkein matam aloma velo yarbe lo noshim. So then, what is the Torah? What's the Torah's intent when it says he should not have too many, he should not have an abundant number of wives, then an overabundant number of wives? Afilu kavigail, even if they happen to be very pious women like Avigail, one of the scripture, we'll call her heroines or paradigms of piety, even women of such high quality, the king is not to have an overabundant number of them. So now in looking at this, Rabbi Shimon, he doesn't offer reasons. He says, when the Torah says, lo yarbe lo noshim, he shall not have an overabundant number of wives, regardless of their quality. Even very pious ones, he shall not have an overabundant number of wives, without reasons being given. Rabbi Yehuda says that when the Torah says he shall not have an overabundant number of wives, that's because they may lead him astray. So then the restriction is dependent on the quality, so that Rabbi Yehuda gives a reason for the Torah ruling, the i.e. the fear of the women leading him astray. And with that in mind, then the halacha will be dependent on what the quality of the women are. So that is certainly an example of Rabbi Yehuda giving taima dekra. The Gemara responds, maybe just to point out here, Rabbi Yehuda gave taima dekra, and when it came to the mashkon collateral and the almona, no almona is to give a mashkon. So that would reflect Rabbi Yehuda's non-giving a reason for the pasuk. The Gemara answers, Li'olam Rabbi Yehuda lo dorish taima dekra. In general, Rabbi Yehuda does not offer reasons for Torah rulings. So then why, in the case of the king and the wives, does Rabbi Yehuda dwell on the reason? V'shayni hocha, this case is different. With regard to lo yar b'lo inoshim demeforish kra, the pasuk itself spells out the reason. V'lo yar b'lo inoshim v'lo yosur levavo. It says that in the Torah itself, without my giving a reason. My time aloy arbeloy noshim. The Torah itself is giving the reason. Why should he not have an overabundant number of wives? Mishum delo yosur, because they are capable of leading him astray. Ah, and if they're incapable, they're very pious, then he can have as many as he wants. So it's not Rabbi Yehuda in this source with the king and the wives is not Rabbi Yehuda offering reasons for the Torah. Rather, it's the Torah itself offers a reason. So going, taking one's cue from the Torah itself, one comes to the conclusion that if you're dealing with pious women, he's entitled to have as many as he wants. Rabbi Shimon in this source seems to depart from what we expect of him. Rabbi Shimon, michti. So Rabbi Shimon says, well, let's look into this. Be'alma darshinon taima dekra. In general, this is Rabbi Shimon's approach. We offer on our own reasons for the Torah ruling. We offer explanations, reasons for the Torah having said whatever it says. So now, if we have license to offer reasons, lichtev rachmona, let the Torah, in this case with the king and the wives, write lo yarbet. Do not have an overabundant number. V'lo bo'inon los yosur. I don't need the Torah to give me the reason, namely the fear of the women leading him astray. V'ano yadana, and I would know on my own. My time lo yarbet. Why does the Torah rule not to have an overabundant number of wives? Mishum de lo yosur, because of the fear of them leading him astray. Lo yosur de kosav rachmon olomali. Why did the Torah have to bother giving the reason? Oh, the answer to that is afilu achas umesira es liboy hare ze lo yisaina. When it comes to a woman capable of leading him astray, even one is, as they say, one too many. Even one he is not to marry. So that in the case of the king and the wives, since the Torah itself gives a reason, that means that I am not to offer reasons. I go on the basis of what the Torah is saying, and then the conclusion therefore is that lo yosu levavo is a problem even if it's one wife. So then the lo yar b'lo nashim is not referring to the type of woman that might lead him astray, but that's referring to pious women. And even with pious women, he should not have an overabundant number. Some of you might be asking, well, what's that number? What's the secret number? What's the maximum number of wives he's allowed to have? The truth is that there are different opinions on that topic, but the the commonly accepted number is 18. The Mishnah. Hachevel es hore chayim oiver mishum lois aseh. One who takes the rechayim of a borrower, and he takes the rechayim, the grindstone of a borrower, is in violation of a negative command. V'chayav mishum shnei kelim. There is a... The grindstone is comprised of two significant parts. We're not getting into all of the details, but there are two significant parts. There's an upper stone that revolves on an axis upon a lower stone, a bottom stone. During this the revolutions of the upper stone, the grains that are found between the two stones are ground or crushed and ground down. So a grindstone taken as a mashkon would involve two violations. That's what chayav mishum shnei kelim. If you take a complete grindstone, you're taking the upper stone and the lower stone. Shenemar, the pasuk says, lo yachboil rechayim v'rechev. The rechayim is the lower stone, the rechev is the upper stone. V'lo rechayim v'rechev bilvad omru, ela kol dover she'oisin v'yoichol nefesh. The Torah, when restricting the taking of a grindstone, isn't limiting the restriction only to that, but any, I like to call it the life-sustaining utensil or vessel or article, anything of that nature, that's called dover she'oisin v'yoichol nefesh, anything that produces food, so to speak, something that's life-sustaining, one is not to take. Shenemar ki nefesh hu chovel. In that very pasuk, which is found in Dvarim Perach of Dalet Pasuk Vav, and we've written it on the side of the Gemara, where it says lo yachbol rechayim rechav ki nefesh hu chovel. By taking a life-sustaining type utensil, it's considered as if you're taking his life. The topic that we are about to start is introduced on the side under the Nosei, the topic heading that we've written in the margin, and it reads, Machlokes Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda, we'll see a disagreement between these two Amoraim, im ha-posuk, ki nefesh hu chovel, the posuk that we just referred to, that end phrase, ki nefesh hu chovel, bo kidei lehosif lav al misha loikeach rechayim kemashkaon, is it coming to add an additional violation for someone who takes a grindstone as a mashkon? Oy, lechayev al sha'ar kelim shalochin emshor. It's coming to mechayev to condemn he who takes any ochel nefesh type vessel as collateral. Now the Gemara, Omar Rav Huna. Chaval, he took as collateral rechayim, loike shtayim. If one took the grindstone, he is in violation of two commands. Mishum rechayim, umishum kinefeshu chovel. We pointed out earlier that the grindstone was made of an upper stone that revolves around a lower stone, upper stone called Rechev, lower stone called Rechayim. So if one took the lower stone as collateral, there is a violation of two commands. One, having taken the Rechayim, in the Pasuk, Rechayim is specified. It says, Lo Yachbo Rechayim. And he's also in violation of Kinefeshu Choveil, the phrase that you find at the end of that pasuk. If the lender took rechayim v'rechev, he took both stones, the upper stone and the lower stone, loke shalosh, he is then subject to three violations. Loke literally is lashings for violating a negative command in the Torah. If it involves an action, a maisa, so it yields or it results in lashing. In taking the two stones that comprise the grinder, how many offenses have been violated according to Rav Huna? Three. The taking of the rechaim, the taking of the rechev, and for having taken that which is life-sustaining, ki nefesh hu chovel. And he enumerates Mishum Rechaim Verechev Umishum Kinefesh Uchoveo. Rabbi Yehuda Omar Chova Rechaim Loke Achas Verechev Loke Achas. For taking the lower stone, one set of lashings. The taking the upper stone in, if that's all he took, one set of lashings. If he took both stones, Rechaim Verechev Loke Shtayim, he is subject to two sets of lashes, or two violations. However, ki nefesh hu choveil, that phrase is not related to the grindstone. Rather, it is, and we continue at the top of Omid Beis, lishar dvorim hu da'asa. It comes to warn against a lender taking other things, other kalim, other vessels that are, let's say, life-sustaining, that are food-related, basic necessity-type vessels. So, we have a machlokis then, Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, in how to view the posuk, or the phrase that says, ki nefesh hu choveil. According to Rav Huna, it serves to add another prohibition regarding the grindstone itself. According to Rav Yehuda, it's a warning against taking other kinds of life-sustaining vessels separate from the grindstone. As we continue in the Gemara, you notice we have a long question. The Gemara refers to a disagreement between Abaye and Rava. That disagreement will appear in a few lines. If you scan ahead in the Gemara, you'll notice the names Rava and Abaye are circled. They happen to have a disagreement in the realm of the Korban Pesach. What the Gemara wants to know is, their machlokis, Abaye and Rava, can it be paralleled to the machlokis that we just saw between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda? In the margin, we have a topic heading, and it reads, Lav, a negative command, Lav shebichlolus, that is stated in a general fashion. We'll see examples of that as we go through the Gemara, but suffice it to say that a lav shebicholos is a type of negative command that when you read it in the Torah, you don't see a specific example of what is being prohibited, but rather a general prohibition regarding the topic in which it's found. Machlokes Abaye and Rava, we will see a disagreement between Abaye and Rava, ha'echol pischoi, Na oy mevushal, one who eats his korban pesach, which I'm sure many of you are well aware that it is a sacrifice that has very specific instructions in how it is to be prepared, and it is to be prepared through roasting it over, we'll say, over an open fire, preparing it in other forms, or eating it in other forms, and specifically gnaw or mevushal. Gnaw is a situation where it's, we'll say, it's what we call maybe in steak terminology, rare. Namely, it's practically raw. And mevushal is that which is cooked in water. One is not to eat the Korban Pesach either gnaw or mevushal. So let us imagine that someone ate his Korban Pesach in one of these forbidden fashions, either in the under roasted fashion or boiled fashion. Haim loike nami mishum ki'im tzliesh. The pasuk describing the Korban Pesach says, do not eat it nor mevushal ki'im tzliesh. For eating ki'im tzliesh other than in a roasted form. Don't eat it in an uncooked or unroasted or cooked form. Rather, one eats it in a roasted form. So if you eat it in a cooked form, you haven't... So that's in and of itself a problem. And in addition, you haven't eaten it in a roasted manner. For that, is there an additional violation? Is there an additional set of lashings? So that issue turns out to be a machlokas between Abaye and Rava. Is there a separate or additional set of lashings for ki'im sliyesh? Hagemara shoelis a machlokas Abaye v'Rava legabi ki'im sliyesh. The Gemara will be asking the machlokas between Abaye and Rava concerning that. Ha'im, is it to'emes? Is it parallel the machlokas Rav Huna Rav Yehuda legabi ki nefesh hu chovel? With regard to the grindstone, the issue of is there a separate set of lashings for ki nefesh hu chovel, concerning which we saw Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda arguing. So now we turn to the Gemara, the middle of the top line of Kuf Tezvav Omid Beis. Lema Abaye v'Rava. Shall we say that Abaye and Rava, who will appear shortly, Bepluta de Rav Huna v'Rav Yehuda komifliki, that they parallel the earlier machlokas, earlier chronologically speaking, the earlier disagreement between Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda. The Yama Rava, regarding the Korban Pesach, Ochal no loike shtayim. If one were to eat the Korban Pesach in a raw form, he's subject to two sets of lashings. Number one, Mishum Na, where the Torah says, do not eat the Korban Pesach Na, and he did, so he's in violation of that. Well, Mishum Kiyum Sliyesh, and also he is in violation of not having eaten it roasted. Mevushal Lokesh Nayim. According to Rava, if he ate the Korban Pesach after cooking it in water, he would be subject to two sets of malchus. One, Mishum Mevushal, where the Torah itself had said, do not eat it, Mevushal, and he did. So that's a violation of that negative command. And Umishum Kiyim Sliyesh, the Pasuk says, do not eat it other than roasted. So if he ate it cooked in water, he's in violation of Kiyim Sliyesh. No umavushal. We're continuing with Rava's, we'll say, third stage of presentation. If he ate a Korban Pesach that was raw and cooked, in other words, part he ate part raw and part cooked, like a shalosh, he is subject to three sets of malchus, mishum no, because of having eaten it in the no state. Umishum avushal. And for having eaten cooked Korban Pesach, umishum kolosuch lenu kiyim sliyesh. And for the command of the Torah, do not eat it other than roasted. Abaye Omar, ein loikin al lav shebecholos. Abaye says that there is no malchus for general type negative commands. The Rashi, third line from the top, Alav Shebecholos, Mishum Lo Sochlenu Kiyim Sliyesh, that does not constitute a separate source of lashing, according to Abaye. Why? The Kail, because that is a pasuk that includes, it has a general nature to it. It's including, the Kail comes to include No Umevushal. When you command someone do not eat it other than roasted, well, contained within that are several prohibitions. Do not eat it raw. Do not eat it cooked. When you have a negative command structured like that, we say ve'ein loikin. We do not give malchus. Ela al na umevushal shein mefurashim. We give malchus, we administer lashings only for a violator of that type of negative command that is explicit. I would say explicit and specific. Whereas lo sechlenu ki'im sliyesh, do not eat it other than roasted, is a general. It's the that which is contained or that which is prohibited by that pasuk is not specified in the pasuk. You don't see in that phrase when it says kim slish, you don't see nor do you see mevushal. You see the command to make sure not to eat it in a fashion other than roasting. And we know then that the way not to eat it, according to that, is inclusive of several different methods of preparation. That's called a lav shebecholos, a general type negative command. And commands like that, according to Abaye, do not warrant a separate set, or do not generate an additional set of malchus. Well, having presented now Rava and Abaye, lema, can we say, Abaye, who was, we'll say, limiting in the malchus, the Omar Rav Yehuda, he would seem to parallel Rav Yehuda when Rav Yehuda had said that ki nefesh uchavel does not generate an additional set of malchus, because that would seem to be a general kind of pasuk. Do not take things for collateral that are life sustaining. What specifically? Well, a lot of different examples could be given. So that would be also a lav shebecholos. That's the initial thinking. So that would seem that Abaye parallels Rav Yehuda. The Rava, the Yom HaKarav Huna, and Rava, who said that ki'im tzliyesh generates an additional set of malchus, would seem to parallel Rav Huna, who said that ki nefesh uchovel by the mashkon situation generates an additional set of malchus. The Rashi says at the beginning of the narrow lines, Abaye k'Rav Yehuda, de hecho de oval haklal, v'al haprat, v'hein shnehem v'lav echad, lo loki aklola, where one has violated a general offense and a specific offense, and they're presented in one negative command, as we have seen, where the lo tochlenu na umavushal ki im tzliyesh, the negative command there includes the specified na and mevushal, and also the general ki im tzliyesh. And Abaye says there is no malchus for the general aspect of that pasuk. And it seems that Rav Yehuda said the same thing with regard to the grindstone and the ki nefesh uchovel. So Abaye would seem to parallel Rav Yehuda, v'Rava d'yomak Rav Huna, and Rava, who said that ki im tzliyesh generates additional set of malchus, would parallel Rav Huna, who said that ki nefesh uchovel generates an additional set of malchus for someone who took a grindstone as collateral. Very often you find this kind of situation in the Shas, where we parallel later authorities with specific earlier authorities. Namely, the later authority is not consistent with all the previous authorities, but fits in, conforms only one of them. That's not the most comfortable situation for a later authority to be in. A later authority would like to believe that what he says, that his opinion, is something that all of the earlier authorities would accept. And in fact, that's what we're going to see now in the Gemara. First, Rava speaks up on his behalf, and later, Abaye speaks for himself. You'll notice that we've used markings to indicate long statements. So first, Rava offers his approach, that his point of view by the Korban Pesach, where the Kiim Sliash will generate an additional set of malchus, is something that even Rav Yehuda by the grindstone could agree with. And Abaye will do the same from his standpoint, saying that what I say, that in the Korban Pesach there are only two violations for Noah and Mevushal, and Kim Slash does not generate an additional set of malchus, is something that even Rav Huna by the grindstone would accept. And the long marking by Abaye will take us down five lines from the top of Kuf Tes Zayin Omid Aleph. Now that we've laid out the map of the Gemara, let's see inside. Omar Loch Rava. Rava Hu, by the Korban Pesach, said that one who would eat it, Nol and Mevushal, would be chayav three sets of malchus. Rava will tell Omer Loch Rava. Rava will tell you, Ano di Amri Afilu ke Rabbi Yehuda. I say what I do, even in accordance with Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda, who by the grindstone was mechayev only two. In other words, Rav Yehuda did not mechayev for kinefesh uchaveil. Ad kan lo komer Rav Yehuda hasam ela. Up till now, Rav Yehuda presented his opinion, which was of a more limited nature. His limitation was there by the mashkon grindstone situation. Elo dechi nefesh hu chovel lo mashma rechayim verechev. The phrase ki nefesh hu chovel, when you look at that phrase, it doesn't. I'm here first. I'll translate the Gemara, and then we'll look at Rashi. The translation of the Gemara would seem to say that when you look at ki nefesh hu chovel, it doesn't imply that the Torah is focusing on rechayim verechev. Since it doesn't imply that, it's going to be used for other things. Now we look at Rashi. Elo mishum dechi nefesh. Rashi is about halfway down the narrow section of the Rashi. Rava is telling us that Rav Yehuda said what he did only over there by the rechaim and rechev. Elo mishum dechi nefesh. Rashi says the marbi sha'ar devarim. Ki nefesh uchovel includes other life-sustaining type utensils. Ilav dekosav le, if that had not been written, lo mishtami le meirechayim verechev, I wouldn't have derived that from rechayim and rechev. The Hava Amina had ki nefesh uchovel been left out, and the Torah taught me only rechayim and rechev. I would have thought that only the grindstone is what the Torah prohibits as taking as mashgon. From Rechaim and Rechev, I wouldn't have come to think anything else is included. Hilkoch l'shar dvorim also. Therefore, ki nefesh uchavel is coming to teach me about other things. V'lo tishde nami ahani. The meforish lav didhu latfuye lavi, and don't then take ki nefesh chovel and ascribe it to the rechaim and rechev that are already specified with the intent of having ki nefesh chovel serve as an additional set of malchus. So because rechev rechaim and rechev would have been understood to be separate and unrelated to ki nefesh uchavel, nefesh uchavel has its own unique purpose, and it's not an auxiliary or an additional lav attached to rechaim and rechev. The Rava goes on to say. And let's go back to the Gemara text. Three lines from the bottom. Avol hocha. But in the case I was talking about, namely the Korban Pesach laws, ki im tzli'esh lemai osa. Why does the Torah bother writing ki im tzli'esh? Once you tell me, do not eat it, no. Do not eat it, mevushal. Well, how else would you eat it? On my own, I would know you would eat it, sliyesh. Does the Torah have to spell that out? If the Torah is bothering itself to spell it out, shma mino lelav, it must be because the Torah wants to impose upon the violator an additional lav. That for eating it, no, you're not only in violation of lo sochlenu na, but also in violation of ki'in sliyesh. So there's a fundamental difference between the relationship of ki nefesh uchovel to the prohibition of taking rechaim and rechev, as opposed to the prohibition of ki'im sliyesh relative to the prohibition of no and levushal. Whereas ki nefesh uchovel, Rava says, Rava can understand the position taken by Rav Yehuda, that it is unrelated to Rechaim and Rechev. Not so, says Rava, regarding Ki'im Sliyesh, where Rav Yehuda would concede to what I said, that Ki'im Sliyesh serves as an additional prohibition for one who ate the Korban Pesach either no or Mevushal. Ve'abaye Omar Loch, Abaye, who said that one who would eat it no and Mevushal would be chayev a sum total of two violations. Ano di amri afilu l'Rav Huna. What I say is something that even Rav Huna could accept. Ad kan lokum Rav Huna hasam elo dechi nefesh uchovel. Up till now, Rav Huna says what he does, that the ki nefesh uchovel is there to impose an additional set of malchus for one who takes rechayim verechev, because Rashi, the Gemara continues at the top of Kuf Tez Zayin, that namely that ki nefesh uchovel yisera hu. Rashi at the top line says yiserhu lelav mishum shar dvorim. It's in fact an extra phrase to include other things, and here's the unique point behind Rav Huna. The kevon the yiserhu lelav the kasve stama. Since it's an extra posuk, an extra phrase to include other things, but it's been stated in an unqualified fashion. It says ki nefesh uchovel, anything that sustains nefesh. Well, that can include any number of utensils. The Torah doesn't specify. That leaves us open to say shad yanami arichayim v'rechev. It can apply, the prohibition of ki nefesh uchovel can apply also to the rechayim v'rechev. There's no, Rashi continues, she'en l'cha lehotziyam mimashmoz ki nefesh uchovel. There's no reason to remove rechayim and rechev from the implied teaching of ki nefesh uchovel al korchuch by force. The rechaim rechev is also an example of nefesh, of something life sustaining. Why would you think to treat rechaim rechev separate from ki nefesh uchovel? Avol hocha, but here with regard to the Korban Pesach, says Abaye, ki im sliyesh Lav Lazara also Losufi Lav Yisera. King Slash is not here as a source of an additional negative command. Ella Kidisanya, but rather it is here in accordance with a teaching that we'll see shortly in the Gemara. It has a separate role. Umikomakom no umavushal mashma bay Shaino over Bana Umavushal Bayom Ella Balaila. And we'll see more about that, what Rashi just said, when we go into the Gemara itself. So that, once again, Abaye sees the opinion of Rav Huna by ki nefesh uchovel, by the grindstone. It is capable of adding an additional lav to one who takes rechaim rechev. Not so with regard to ki im sliyesh, which Abai tells us has a totally separate function, not one of adding additional malchus. So let's read that again in the Gemara, where Abai tells us that Rav Huna said what he did, but it's limited to the nefesh hu chovel, because yiseirahu v'kevon di yiseirahu shad yarechayim v'rechev. It's extra for the purpose of including other life-sustaining vessels, and since, as we saw in the Rashi, it's not a qualified phrase, it can be extended or applied to rechayim and rechev as well. That was Rav Huna's approach. Avol hocha, Abaye says, but over here, ki im tzliyesh lav Yiserahu de Mevilei Lechides Anya. It's not extra. I need it for the following teaching. And since it's not extra, it's not here to add an additional lav, and Rav Huna can easily agree with me on this point. So, what is Kiyum Salesh? What's its purpose? For the following teaching in the Barisa, the Chedesanya. B'shaw sheyeshnoi b'kum echotzli. When there is a positive command of eating the Korban Pesach roasted, when is that? That's at night. That is the night of the 15th of Nisan. At that point, yeshno b'baal tochalno. At the 15th of Nisan, if one were to eat the Korban Pesach no, raw, he will be in violation of eating it raw. B'shaw sheina b'kum echotzli. But at a time when he's not commanded to eat the Korban Pesach, namely in the daytime of the 14th of Nisan. It's true that that's when it's slaughtered, but that's not when it's eaten. So during the day of the 14th, when there's no mitzvah to eat it roasted, if he were to eat the Korban Pesach in a raw form on the 14th of Nisan, he would not be in violation of lo sochlenu no. So this interdependence of how yes to eat it with how not to eat it, that's the reason the pasuk makes reference to ki'im sliyesh. Just to repeat, when you have the mitzvah of roasting it and eating it roasted, then you have the negative command of do not eat it raw. But when the positive command of eating it roasted, go ahead and eat it roasted, is not binding, it's not applicable, namely the 14th of Nisan during the daytime hours, if one were to eat it in the prohibited fashion, he would not be in violation. Tanyo Kavose de Rav Yehuda. Here we have a Tanaic source that supports Rav Yehuda. The source says, Chaval Zug Shel Saporim. If one took a scissors of a barber. A scissors is made of two separate blades that are attached to one another with a screw, with some kind of entity that enables the two blades to move apart and together in a cutting action. V'tzemet shel poros, or a tzemet is a brace that holds cows together for plowing purposes, and in the Meforshim you see the idea that this device, this brace that holds the animals together, is made up of a couple of parts. So one who takes a tzemed shel poros as collateral, Yachol lo yehi chayav elo achas. Could it be that he would be in violation of only one offense? Talmud lomar lo yachbol rechayim v'rechev. The Torah warns against taking a grindstone. Ma rechayim v'rechev shein miyuchodim shnei keilim voisim aloch achas. V'chayav al zeh b'fnei atzmo v'al zeh b'fnei atzmo. Just like the rechayim and rechev is made of two parts that combine to perform one function, namely grinding of grain, and the Torah is mechayev for each part separately. In other words, if you take just the upper stone, now the upper stone in and of itself that has no function, but yet if you take it by itself, there is a separate violation. Af kol dvarim shein shnei kelim miuchadim v'yoisim meloch achas. So to any other vessel that has that characteristic, that it is made of two parts and they join together to fulfill one role, chayav al zeh b'fnei atzmo v'al zeh b'fnei atzmo. He will be chayav for each one separately. Now, how does this source support Rav Yehuda? Now, let's take a look at Rashi a few lines down from here. Af kol umidiyolef luhu meirechay v'rechev, from the fact that the scissors are learned from the two parts of the grindstone, Shma Mino, we conclude from here, that berechai berechav chayv nami shnayim komar veloy shalosh. For the grindstone, there are also two offenses and not three. Vahainu kerav Yehuda, and that is the support to Rav Yehuda. Fact that in this source, scissors are parallel to grindstone, and scissors yield two offenses if taken as collateral. Taken and not returned to the borrower. So too, with regard to the grindstone, two offenses and not three. That's what Rav Yehuda said, because his opponent, Rav Huna, said that if you were to take the two stones forming the grindstone, you would be in violation of the additional ki nefesh hu chovel. Hahu gavra de choval sakino de ashkafto mechavrei. There was an incident where a person took as a mashkon. Choval is to take as a mashkon. Sakino dashkafta. This is a special knife used by butchers who carve meat, who cut meat into their respective sections. So someone who had lent money to this individual, call him, lent money to the butcher, and took his butcher's knife. Also lekame dabaye. The case came to Abaye. Omarle zila hadre davi le klisha isin bo yochel nefesh. You have to give that back to the butcher. It's true, you lent him money, but you have to give that back to him because that is an example of a life-sustaining a vessel. V'ta kum bedino alo. Let's look at Rashi on this, on the last narrow line. V'ta kum bedino taveu ledin al chovchos. Summon him to court on regarding the debt he owes to you. Im moide lecha, if he confesses to you that he owes you the money, o im yesh edim, or if there are witnesses that he borrowed the money, yishalem, he will have to pay. Im lav, and if not, yishava shuas hesis. Then a rabbinic based oath will be imposed. In other words, if he denies completely, I don't owe you anything, then he'll have to take a shvua de rabbanan for someone who's kofer bakol, someone who totally denies. Rava Omar. We continue in the Gemara. Rava says, lo tzorch lemeikam bedino ala. He doesn't have to, the lender doesn't have to summon him to court. Now, Rashi adds very important information. Rashi, Rava Omar, on the second line, under the Gemara. Kevan de Mashkene, since he, the lender, took it as collateral, v'ein edim shemishkeno, and there are no witnesses that the lender took it from the butcher as a mashkon. Hayayacha litain, the lender could have claimed, l'kucha hi biyodi, I bought this. It's mine, I bought it. Since that is a possibility, lo tzorch lemekam bedino iluyo dekona le mashkon lishova velito ad kedei damov. He has acquired the mashkon, enabling him, the lender, to swear and receive as payment up till the value of that knife. Let's read that again in the Gemara. Rav Omar lo tzorch lemekam bedino ala. He doesn't have to summon the butcher to court. The yocholiton ad kedei demeim, and he can place a claim up till the value of that which he took as collateral, up to the value of that special knife. Ve'abaye less lay hahu svara. Abaye doesn't seem to hold from that analysis. Well, if that's the case, my shna, what's different about this case with the knife and the fact that the lender is holding on to it from the following case, Me'ano Izi, the Achli Chushla Benardo, was an incident involving goats that were eating chushla in Nardo. Chushla are peeled barley grains. The Yosemora de Chushla, the owner of the peeled barley grains, came along with Tafas Lehu, and grabbed these goats, v'katayin tuvan, was putting a claim in for a much greater loss than the value of those goats that he just grabbed. And Shmuel said that the owner of the chushla has a right to place a claim of damage up till the value of those goats. So why? And that's a case that we'll say is unanimous, is universally accepted. Why does Abaye not seem to accept that ruling and thereby enable the lender to hold on to the knife and put a claim in up till the value of the knife? Abaye said otherwise. He said you have to give the knife back, come to court, see if you can find witnesses, etc. So the Gemara explains the difference. Hasam, in the case of the goats, lav midi da avda le'oshole olagore hu. Goats are not an item that people loan out and borrow or rent. Haha, with regard to the knife, midi de avid le'oshole olagore hu. It's something that people will lend out, will rent out. Fact that the lender is holding onto it is not indicative of his being the owner of it. It's not a situation like we saw before in the Rashi that he could simply claim, I bought it. Why not? Because there's a counterclaim. You claim you bought it? No, it's something that you borrowed from me or I rented to you. Tisholach Rav Huna Bar Ovin, Dvorim Wasuyim Lashil Laskir, Vyomalokuchen Hein Biyodi, items that people generally loan out or rent out. And regarding an item like that, someone claims, I bought it. Ain't no Namon. The claim of I bought it is not trustworthy, it's not reliable. Because of what we just said, there's a counterclaim. You're holding on to it, not because you bought it, because I loaned it to you. Oh. And therefore, Abaye said, if you, by grabbing the knife, that doesn't entitle you to place a claim, say, paralleling the value of the knife. Now, the Gemara turns the tables for Rava, less lay, high svara. Does Rava not hold from that svara? Namely, items that one loans out or rents out, items like that, a claim of I bought it has no strength. For how Rava himself, apig zuga de sarbala v'safra de agadata mi yasmi. Rava himself issued a ruling whereby he extracted or removed from the possession of orphans a zuga de sarbala, special wool cutting shears. Safra de gadata is books of agadic literature. He took them from yisoymen, from orphans, on the grounds of bedvorim shuasum lashlaskir, that their father didn't bequeath it to them as part of an inheritance, but their father had been in possession of it as something that he borrowed or rented. We look at Rashi, toward the end of the Rashi commentary, Afilu Miyasmi Shaviu Apailim Eidim, the original owners of these wool shears and agadic books, the original owners brought witnesses, Shehoyu Shelohen, that they once belonged to them. Fehain Toanim, and these original owners are claiming, Hashlum Leavihem Shalela, we loaned them to their, the orphan's father. Ve'afkinu Rava Minaihu Mishum Dvar Masum Lashalaskir. And Rava, relying on that testimony, extracted, removed, took away from the Yisomim those items. If the claim of I purchased it was such a powerful claim, then Yasmi, these orphans, Kilo, Tanu, Nami, even if they didn't make that claim, Anantaninola, we would have made that claim in their favor. And yet Rava didn't do so. So it must be that the claim of lekuach ubiyadi does not work against something that's also lashul haskir. Rava himself agrees with that. Then how could it be above that Rava ruled that the lender who seized the butcher's knife can maintain possession of it on the grounds of lekuach ubiyadi? Omar loch Rava, hi nami, the butcher's knife, kevon the mifgema, since it's a special knife and it's sensitive to notches developing in it through misuse. Kapti in shivalo moshli, people who own such knives are mindful of them and do not loan them out. So for the opposite party to say, oh, you didn't buy it, I loaned it to you, we wouldn't believe that, because it's not something that people loan out. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.